You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
Thank you, Scott. Good morning. Nice to see this many people out after New Year's. Happy New Year, by the way. We wish to acknowledge that we are on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas and the New Credit First Nations lands, which lands were previously occupied by the Seneca and Huron-Wendat First Nations. As we begin our service, let us be aware that the Truth and Reconciliation Commission recommended 94 calls to action to address the legacy of residential schools and advance the process of Canadian reconciliation. Our call to this action this morning is number 18. We call upon the federal, provincial, territorial, and Aboriginal governments to acknowledge that the current state of Aboriginal health in Canada is a direct result of previous Canadian government policies, including residential schools, and to recognize and implement the health care rights of Aboriginal people as identified in international law, constitutional law, and under the treaties.
Over the holidays, I received two pieces of correspondence that I want to share with you. One came from Gordon Pollard in British Columbia. Dear Reverend Vosper, just a short note to wish you and your congregation a joyous Christmas and a happy, healthy, and peaceful 2016. I hope you're making good progress in your continuing struggles for freedom of expression within the United Church. Take care, Gordon Pollard. And the other one is a gift from Judy Carey of Guelph, Ontario, and it's a copy of John Philip Newell's book, Praying with the Earth, which I'll put into our library. So it was lovely to receive those messages of celebration from people we know. So thank you.
Grounded, Guided, Growing, A Time for Centering, from Scott Kearns.
When Greta and I were in Atlanta, we went to the Atlanta Center for Human and Civil Rights. And I just want to take you to one of the rooms in order to talk about the next slide, which will be up there momentarily. Most everyone in the world is grounded and guided and growing. The question is, in what? We went to this Museum of Human and Civil Rights, and in the global section was a long, long, long room. And on this side of the room were life-size cutout photographs of people who were standing up and a little biography of them on the wall beside it. As far as you could see, people, people, people on the left side of the room. And on the right side of the room, the same thing. Cutout life-size pictures of people. And over the ones on the left side, it said, human rights abusers or offenders, human rights offenders. And you would walk past these people, you were walking or standing right in front all the people down through history who have abused and offended people's rights. It was because it looked so real, it was quite scary to stand in front of some of these people who had done such horrendous things. And on the other side was human rights defenders. And you walk past these historical and present-day people who have stood for the rights of all people. And at the end of the hall, it says, which side are you on? And that was a very powerful moment because you were standing among these people. And my biggest thought was, these are all human beings. They're all human beings, but the divide is so clear. And sometimes it's a bit fuzzy because we're all a mixture. But I thought, you wanted to stand on the one side of the room and say, here I stand, because I choose to be grounded in all of life, not just privileged people, not just the people I know, and everyone, grounded in the whole of life. And then how do I choose to be guided by that? The room very definitely divided on that. To choose to be divided in that real, real life by love. And then trying to get better at it by growing in wisdom. And that was it was a very powerful visit for Greta and me. That's the object of the preposition for me. It didn't sound right, but it was. It was correct. And so always it's that choice. Which side of the room are we standing on? You know, and so to be grounded in all of life, the parts we don't like hearing about, the parts we do, and to choose, I will walk in this life lovingly and help me do that better. So as we center ourselves today, I'm going to play a song I chose for our New Year's hope for ourselves.
Each week, we have an opportunity to share within a community that is created by the values and held together by the values that Scott has raised for us, all the values that fall out from that simple word, love, which, of course, is far more complex than simplicity could ever explain it to be. But we choose to live that word out through acts of justice and compassion, stepping into places in the world where despair, where misunderstanding, where division is supreme and needs to be acknowledged and addressed. And coming together as a community, we reinforce those values for one another and for ourselves as a community so that we can act individually and as a whole in the work of confronting injustice, of challenging those people who would violate human rights, of stepping into the role that Scott has described for us. So each week we do this in our sharing time by lifting up our concerns about places in the world, about groups that continue to be violated, that continue to experience oppression and the lack of human dignity. And those places in the world that are experiencing chaos, whether it comes at the hands of humanly created institutions or whether it comes because of the result of something that our world is experiencing, some of which is humanly created. So we begin by just opening ourselves at the opening part of this to state from where we are seated those places or groups that have been on your heart, that have been brought to your attention in the past week, so that we can share them here and so write them on all of our consciousnesses and carry them with us into the coming week. One of the big signs of hope, and you know, this term isn't often mentioned in churches, but female genital mutilation has been a tragic consequence of certain mindsets over the course of human history, I expect. And I was just so relieved, but still distraught, relieved that, and I can't even remember the country now, Nigeria? Yes, thank you. Created a law that makes female genital mutilation illegal and has very substantial consequences for those who practice that. And in a world where the taboos and the challenges that face women are often handed down by women to women, this will be a real challenge. But I was so moved that the struggle continues and that there are still voices that are being raised to make a change in the world in this very important area.
I have a confession, which I'm sure you will all share. We have a number of bird feeders, no turkeys, but you know the lovely birds. We have a family of cardinals and red finches and goldfinches and chickadees and juncos and new four woodpeckers. Beautiful. And at the suet holder, there came a bad bird. It was a dull color. I didn't want it there because I wanted the bright colored birds, because that's what I like looking at. So it was a bad bird. And I thought, what am I doing with it? You're the wrong color, so I don't want you at my feeder. That's very bad. And so then Greta looked up this bird, which is the starling, and found out that it has one of the most beautiful songs of all songbirds. And then found out that its throat is so configured that it can sing two notes at once, so it can sing harmony by itself. So then I thought, so that's a good bird. And then I thought, what am I doing? He just earned my... No, and it really taught me how I level things and decide worth. I thought, okay, start all over again. They're birds. They're all birds. They're welcome at our feeder. Doesn't matter what they can do or not do or anything for me. Who's that? Just because I'm giving them the food. But that's just, it was just one of those lessons of how we judge and divide and do all that. So all your birds, including yours, are welcome at our feeder.
I'm not even going to do a perspectives today. I think that was sufficient. <Don't you? laughs> We celebrate that we are not alone in our quest for justice and for the building of relationships of dignity and love in the world, and that there are so many who are already engaged in that work. We are inspired by them, we are called by them, and we are strengthened by them. In this abundant blessing, we share the joy. And now I invite you to share these words, our words of commitment, and feel them in you in such a deep way that you know you can only commit to live according to these words in the days to come. As I live every day, I want to be a channel for peace. May I bring love where there is hatred, and healing where there is hurt, joy where there is sadness, and hope where there is fear. I pray that I may always try to understand and comfort other people, as well as seeking comfort and understanding from them. Wherever possible, may I choose to be a light in the darkness, a help in times of need, and a caring, honest friend. And may justice, kindness, and peace flow from my heart forever. Amen.
There are two readings this morning. The song, Greta wrote the words to in the middle of the two readings. And it will flow as three different thoughts on the same theme.
The first part has two people involved, and I'll outline them for you. First person, a revolutionary war of freedom. Hiawatha responded crisply, and I agree. Does Superman ever fly to Thailand and free the kids slaving in the sweatshops owned by rich corporations? No, he doesn't. Does Batman ever break into prison and free the wrongfully convicted and over-sentenced black man whose rights were trampled on when he was incarcerated? No, he doesn't. Does Spider-Man ever break into a house in suburbia and beat up the abusive and violent husband? No, he doesn't. Second person. Do the Fantastic Four ever fly out to third world countries and defend the rights of poor civilians against greedy American corporations? No, they don't, said the pirate, not to be outdone. First person. They're all just tools used by the state to maintain the status quo, said Hiawatha. Scottish comic book author Grant Morrison is known for culture jamming and constant reinvention of his work. We've always known we'd eventually be called upon to open our shirts and save the day, and the superhero was a crude, hopeful attempt to talk about how we might all feel on that day of great power and great responsibility.
That song was actually inspired by during our Academy Awards series last year when we had watched the movie Selma, and that fifth verse that we didn't get to sing was the one that was about the race, but we'll sing it again. This year's Academy Awards series starts on January 24th and runs through to February 28th, the evening of the Academy Awards, and we have a number of films that we're watching, all of which have something to do with leaving something behind, so I'm calling it the Left Behind series, which I know is probably copyrighted by those who believe in the rapture and have written books and video games and films about that, but we're going to have our own little Left Behind series here ourselves. The focus moment this week, you're doing the focus moment. I want you to spend a few moments thinking about what that world might be like, what the world that the dream would be about might be like. What if every obstacle that was in our way, if we could answer all of those questions in that song and more, if you could imagine that world, what would it look like? And I want you to take a few moments to think about that, to just close your eyes if you're comfortable doing that, and envision what that world would be like. And now I want you to think of a few of the reasons that are always given for why that's impossible. What is it that makes that impossible? Why can't we make that happen? For the world is full of zanies and fools who don't believe in sensible rules and won't believe what sensible people say. So it's possible. Because these daft and dewy-eyed dopes keep building up impossible hopes, impossible things are happening every day. So obviously I went to see Cinderella last night. I'm going to focus a little bit on that because it fell into the theme that the new year was bringing for me to speak about this Sunday, because the new year traditionally has not just been about making resolutions. It's often been about the reinstatement, the re-enthronement of kings, or the re-recognition of lords, the dedication services for all that happens in the land that keeps things happening the way they're supposed to happen. I once participated in the opening of the law courts in Ontario. It was a grand service of pomp and ceremony at Yorkminster Park Baptist Church, and I was one of the facilitators of that service, which brought together people from a variety of religious traditions, and officially blessed the activity of the courts through the coming year. It's something that, from my perspective now, some, 16 years later, or longer than that, 20 years later, I probably would be a little bit more, what? Why are we doing this? But at that point in time, it was the opportunity to come together and have a shared understanding that what we were doing in religious institutions and what was happening in the judicial system could somehow work together to bring about this understanding of justice, this to reinforce the norms of society that created the possibility for good lives, for all of us to live with dignity, to allow us to pursue our economic freedoms, and for us to live just lives. It's a bit of naivety woven into that perspective, but it seemed that that was the good thing to do, and I'm not sure whether they continue to do that each year or not, but it was certainly something that was a very significant part of the law court's annual year. And so, too, it was in our tradition long ago, I'm talking about human tradition, not necessarily religious tradition, where the king, the high king of the countries, the emperor, would cede their throne at the end of the year, would give it up, and take it back at the beginning of the year. And the people would gather to acknowledge that they were being given, if only for a moment, the right to choose their king, who would then be granted all the powers and authority that the king had had a moment before when it had been given to the people and then given back to that king. But it's interesting how time changes, and I'm going to use the story of Cinderella to help us see that. The first Cinderella animated film, the story is an old fairy tale, but the first animated film was made. Does anyone know when the first Cinderella was made?
37?
No. 1950. It was made in 1950. Walt Disney put it together, a musical production. And without even having viewed it recently, what kind of norms do you think it reinforced? Anyone? The traditional fairy tale of the woman, the beautiful young maiden, being chosen by the most powerful, wealthy, wonderful man in the world. And she lived happily ever after. In fact, we have no idea how she lived, because it always ends with a happily ever after, you know, the end, and we don't actually get to see what the end is. Some of us would probably have a field day writing the end to that story, right? Perhaps we should collude on it at some point in time. The version that I grew up with was made in 1965, starring? Yes. Oh, my gosh. She was just my dream, Leslie Ann Warren. Yeah, don't Google her images, because it will completely shatter your image of her. Because as Cinderella, she was perfect. She taught me the songs that sort of made my life, that hole in my own little corner, in my own little room. I mean, that was my song when I was growing up. It was like, okay, fine, but I have a place where I can go and you can't tell me what to do when I'm there. And so I would go to that place and I'd sing my song, and that was how I got to cope with the way that things were unfolding in my, you know, not so perfect life. Didn't we all have a not so perfect life? And isn't that why that song was just the perfect song for all of us? It also had the song Impossible, which I think might have been, you know, like the Nancy Drew Mysteries, my I can do anything song. The Nancy Drew Mysteries that gave me all the power to go out and be my own person and solve my own problems and actually have a life that was, you know, discreet and separate from guys. Sorry, honey. But it was the inspiration of that story, that Cinderella in 1965, but the same story was kind of woven into that as the 1950 animated feature. Still had, you know, the very powerful prince who marries the downtrodden, you know, horribly treated Cinder girl and makes her every dream come true. Again, we have to write the ending to that story. So fast forward to the production last night. There was one in 2013, I believe. There was another Disney that came. No, 2013 was when the Broadway one started, the one that we saw last night. The most phenomenal parts of which are when Cinderella goes like this, and her entire dress changes just like that, like unbelievable costume design. We're all like, what happened there? And you know, it's like pull a string And at one point, she stands in front of the fireplace. Her entire dress is sucked up the chimney. I mean, and there's another dress underneath. But the dress disappears up the chimney. Like, how often does that happen? That was probably the clue to the fact that it wasn't the real Cinderella for my granddaughter. But in this story, there are some significant details changed. The story has been adapted so that there's an intervention that happens in many places that we don't see in those traditional depictions of the story. First of all, the people in the land aren't just downtrodden, they're organizing. They're downtrodden organizers. And they have a hero, one of the guys who would have one of those pictures on the one side of the human rights museum, a guy who's, you know, kind of a bit bumbly, but he's got his ideas sorted out, and he wants to be an activist. And so he stands up on the box in the marketplace, and he tells the people that if they come together, they can make change in the land. He has a dream about how he can do that. He has a vision. And so he stands up there and he blusters and he tells the story and he gets people excited. And that's not in the original Cinderella by Disney. It's not even in the 2015 Cinderella by Disney, which was just out and which is more like the 1950 Cinderella than anything that would be contemporary. So there's this recognition that there's kind of a tension there between the people and the palace. And the prince, he's not just living in this cocoon of privilege, although that cocoon is being wound as tightly as possible by his greatest advisor, who keeps trying to wind the cocoon around and around and around the prince so he never actually finds out what's going on outside the palace gates. But the prince wants to know. So he asks, and he finds out. And Cinderella, not only is she, you know, this poor downtrodden girl from whom her fortune has been taken and who is left, you know, cleaning out the ashes from the fireplace, she actually is a lobbyist. She is. She takes the work of the people, she hears it, she molds it, and she tells the prince he needs to listen. It's a totally new Cinderella. If at the end of the year, when we ceded our power, when we let go of it and we gave it back to the powers that be, and we had the opportunity and the power and the time in that flash of a moment to actually come about with an idea, an institution maybe, or maybe a system, or maybe something that would deny both of those things any kind of credibility, that would bring about a world in which, you know, all the things that you were thinking when you had your eyes closed during the focus moment, all those things could be true. It's a process that we think about all the time. It's a process that undergirds some of our decisions. And sometimes we sleep through whole years of our lives. We sleep through them completely unaware of that moment where we're supposed to tear the shirt open and there's this great superhero garment underneath, and we actually step into that moment of changing the world, you know, regardless of the cost to ourselves, because the change is what is more important than anything else. It's a process that we are readied for, as the reading told us, by these superpower stories, by these fairy tales rendered complex investigations of current social systems, and we are invited to take on that role. I found this week a list of superhero quotes that I wanted to share with you. Not all of them are really positive, but they were listed in a Reader's Digest article about how superheroes can help us be more human, how they can help us with our story. And so I've rearranged them a little bit, and I'm going to read you the last one first because I couldn't really figure it out. But I didn't want to leave it there. So it's by the Scarlet Witch in the Avengers fairy tales. Anybody familiar with the Avengers fairy tales? Ah, so maybe you know this. She says, "But everyone's story begins once upon a time, and it's up to us to cherish the time we're given to ensure we live happily ever after." And I wrote down, seriously, I don't know what that means. I think what it means is that the person who was compiling the lists had only men, and they had to find a woman's quote, so they picked that one out. But seriously, I don't know what that means. There's another woman's quote that they picked out as well, and I'm going to get to it later. It's Wonder Woman, but she's quoting John Lennon, so it doesn't really count as a woman's quote, does it? Anyway, so here's the story that we live out. The first thing is dreaming what is possible, like dreaming outside that box, getting past all those impossible barriers into that place where we can be dewy-eyed dopes and think that there's something possible out there that might be achieved. And here are the quotes that go with that. Martian Manhunter, number 1 million, says, "The future is worth it. All the pain, all the tears, the future is worth the fight." We have this picture of what the future could be. And when that picture is something that is better than what we have now, that's what we're called to. That's what we are challenged to bring about. So that's the possible. And it's when we have the possible up there that we can commit ourselves to it and say that the future is worth it. It's where I call, when that picture, that's where hope dies. Right? I talked about hope a few weeks ago. That's where hope dies, in that future that is possible. Because we no longer have to hope that people will have food. We no longer have to hope that people will have shelter. We no longer have to hope that there will be a cure for every malady. Because, well, we probably still have to hope for that. But everything is realized. And once things are realized, we don't need to worry about hope. So isn't it worth the struggle, the fight, the engagement to bring that about, no matter what the costs are? And as I say, you're given a pass. You get to sleep through probably 98% of your life. Maybe 97, if I could convince you of it. And those other 2 or 3%, that's where you have to really get with these superheroes and their quotes. That's when you really have to pull off the shirt and stand up and be responsible for the change that has to happen. So that's getting to the place where hope gets to die. And then Captain America, Daredevil series number 233, says, "I'm loyal to nothing, General, except the dream." And that's the dream, right? So that's what we get to be loyal to. We see it, we feel it, we taste it in that 3% of our lives. Do you know how much time that is in human lifetimes? Like the 7.3 billion people on the earth right now, if you took 3% of their lifetimes, imagine the energy that would go to bringing about that dream. Just 3%. I mean, and all of us are dedicated here to what, 90%? Okay, I'm kidding. You didn't get that, did you? Okay, I'm letting you off the hook. It's not quite 90. But imagine all of that energy put to realizing a world in which there is no hunger, or realizing a world in which there is no war, or realizing a world where it's possible for us to think of new ways to get from one place to another that don't suck up half of the world's resources. Or imagine a world like Jeremy Rifkin did that says, you know what, our communications that we are coming up with, they're going to teach us to be the empathic civilization that we want to be, and we won't have to worry about that kind of stuff. Like 3% of our energies put to that would be amazing. But the reality is that there are people out there, supervillains, like Darkseid, who's a character in Superman, the animated series. "I never settle. What I cannot have, I will destroy." I thought that was pretty good. I didn't even practice that. But anyway, there are these supervillains out there who are sure that that is not going to be the way of the world. That is not the way the world is going to turn. And a lot of them are putting 3% of their time or even more into that. And some of them have their whole lives invested in it. And some of them have invested their families' lives in that too. So they have a lot of power tied up in trying to make sure that the systems continue the way they are. This is what I call the reality. The reality is that not everybody wants to put their 3% toward making the world a better place, and including everyone, and making sure that everyone has options. I mean, options are the division between those who have and those who do not. Options. Poverty is ruled by a lack of options. So there are people who will not want those options to be put in play. So we have to figure out a way to get beyond those people. And there's other quotes here that give us that fortitude. Thor, in Thor, Heaven and Earth, number 2, says, "The fate of your planet rests not in the hands of gods. It rests in the hands of mortals." How true is that? Everybody's hand up. Hands of mortals. Yay! Yes, hands of mortals. That's where the future lies. The test of reality, the planet, the planet's future lies in our hands. We talk about that all the time. That's how the dream becomes reality, when we put our hands and our hearts to it. But Professor X in the Uncanny X-Men says, "The greatest power on Earth is the magnificent power we all of us possess, the power of the human brain." Scott and I had an interesting conversation based on another quote from Grant Morrison, who was one of the authors of the One of the readings that John shared this morning from his book Super Gods, What Masked Vigilantes, Miraculous Mutants, and a Sun God from Smallville Can Teach Us About Being Human. I have to get this book. Anyway, here's the reading. Superhero science has taught me this. Entire universes fit comfortably inside our skulls. Not just one or two, but endless universes can be packed into that dark, wet, and bony hollow without breaking it open from the inside. The space in our heads will stretch to accommodate them all. The real doorway to the fifth dimension was always right here, inside. That infinite interior space contains all the divine, the alien, and the unworldly we'll ever need. And I think that's what Professor X was saying, in a much more simple manner, that where there is need, where there are challenges, where there are impossibilities, the only thing that is ever going to get beyond them or address them appropriately is what is inside that dark, wet, bony hollow. What is inside our heads, our minds, our imaginations, our ability to throw an idea out into the future and imagine what all the different responses to it might be, and then how to maybe tweak it a bit so it doesn't actually end up that way, but it ends up this way, or open our minds to what someone else has to say and change that idea considerably to the point that it becomes something that can really happen. I sent an email to my son yesterday. He's a graduate of OCAD, a painter. And one of his fellow grads, someone who graduated from the design section of OCAD, has an Indiegogo campaign on right now, trying to raise $100,000 to get his design into production. And his design is this little 20-pound thing, looks like R2-D2 with a pedal on it, like your garbage can in the kitchen. And you take the lid off and you put clothes in it, a couple of liters of water, some soap, and you pump it, and it goes round and round and round, and it washes your clothes while you're exercising. It's amazing. I couldn't believe it. And there on Indiegogo, it shows how the ideas went through a number of series of different things until it came together in the design that they now have. And it's a brilliant design for a world that has to find new ways to exercise, right? We can collude with one another to come up with ideas, with ways that stuff in our minds can create a future that is better for all. And then there's the frustration. What happens when the unstoppable force meets the immovable object? They surrender. Superman said that. Superman said, okay, I'm the unstoppable force. Or I'm the immovable object. I surrender or you surrender, one or the other. I think Superman believes that he's the immovable object. Okay, so you think you're the unstoppable force? Here I am. Come and get me. And see if you're going to get past me. There's frustration because that unstoppable force is going to come at us from who knows how many different points all at the same time. And we've got to stand fast. We've got to find some way to plant our feet solidly, seal our hearts completely, hold to one another, and become that immovable object. Because if we're going to try to get to the world that we want to get to, we can't be swayed from side to side. You can't open up and say, oh yeah, your way first. We've got to have some commitment about what it is we want to be. We have to be the immovable object. And then there's this one, as I can really relate to this one. I need a day. This is Iron Man from Captain America, number 29. I need a day when there aren't 20 crises to deal with, but I don't see that coming anytime soon. Don't we all? Don't we all find ourselves caught in a world of our lives that are so taken up with 100 different things that need to be done? We finally got Scott a new computer this week because, oh my goodness, his computer was just a disaster. We got it home. I transferred everything. I was so excited. You are going to see such a difference, honey. I give it to him. He turns it on. It won't go on the internet. You know what that means? That means we have to take it back to the store. That means we have to argue with them that, yes, we did buy the warranty, and no, we don't have the receipt because this is all you gave us. It means like 2 or 3 more hours of frustration. We will always be faced with frustration. But We have a positive attitude toward it. And so the computer's back at the store and it's getting fixed and we're going to pick it up tomorrow. That's what we do. And then, because this was a Reader's Digest list, I loved this one. It's Spider-Man in The Amazing Spider-Man number 216. And this is another lament about those frustrations. Right now, I'd trade the whole Spider-Man bit for a rocking chair and a subscription to Reader's Digest. Isn't that great? Immortalized in a comic despite, you know, decades of publication on their own. Eventually, we hope to get to the place of triumph. That's what this is all about, where the idea, the dream, triumphs over the reality, triumphs over the frustrations, where we break through and we see things really happen, where we see possibilities becoming realities, and we are excited and delighted with that. This is the quote. This is where the quote from Wonder Woman comes in, but this is from Dr. Octopus. Real crime would be to not finish what we started. Now, Dr. Octopus is actually one of those supervillains, right? And he's trying to say that, the crime, don't arrest me for the crime, the real crime would be not to finish this disastrous plot. We want to make this come true and rule the world, you know, like Pinky and the Brain. But Doc Oct doesn't get through with his desire. But I wanted to use that one to point out that values are just values. They're neither good nor bad. So we have to imbue them with good or bad. We create good or bad by the things that we identify as good or bad. So, you know, a social democracy, some of us would say that's good. Others would rather throw themselves from a cliff than live in a social democracy. So we identify what we say is good. So when we put our values into the categories of good or evil, or bad, I suppose is not as hard to hear as evil, if we put them in those categories, then we can choose to live by them in ways, then we will choose to live by them. If social democracy is in our bad category, we will live as though social democracy is poison, and we will try to put it down in every opportunity we can. If we decide that it's good, we will live as though social democracy is good, and we will do everything we possibly can to bring it about. So we have the power of defining good and evil, of creating good and evil in the world through the decision of our values. But here's that Wonder Woman quote. What was it that John Lennon said? Love is the flower you've got to let grow. Let it grow already and quit trying to legislate it. When we see that there are good things happening, that we've defined as good and they're happening, let's just get out of the way and let them happen. We can be totally OCD about everything if we want to be. We can finesse it right down to the last detail. And when we do that, we often get in the way of letting it bloom the way it's supposed to bloom. I was telling Marion Cruikshank about an amaryllis that she gave us this year, and I brought it out of the box, and it had already looped itself around the pot with a bud down at the side. So I looked at the stick that I have to hold my orchids up, and I thought, should I pull that thing up and straighten it out? Should I put it with the sun that way? Will it grow? And I decided not to do anything with it. I just let it bloom. And it looks amazing. Like it grows down the pot, and then there's this beautiful bloom out. Sometimes things will not look the way you want them to look. But they may be the iteration of the values that you have. They may be the manifestation of everything you think is good. Just get out of the way and let it happen. That's what Wonder Woman is saying, despite the fact she had to quote John Lennon in order to say it. And then there's the celebration at the end. When we get to the place where something good has come into being, and we get to say, that was great. And here's Cyborg from Teen Titans. All right, y'all, Four Eyes is history, his ghoulies are gone, and we just saved the whole dang universe. Who wants French toast? I love that. Okay, we did it. Yay! Let's do something else and have a celebration. And then there's the Scarlet Witch one, which I didn't understand at all. So the point of which is that there's always a second between that moment when someone expresses their perspective of the world, and we express ours. There's a space between those two, because sometimes someone else's idea of the dream is not what ours is. But we have the responsibility, the authority, and the only things that will ever work to bring ours about. And so working together and working as individuals with the strength of all kinds of superpowers and graphic novels, you know, giving us the courage to do so, we have the opportunity to rip open our shirts and step into a moment that will bring us closer to that picture of the world that you had in your head half an hour ago. That picture of the world where I'll bet you somebody was thinking, you know, there would be no discrimination around gender. There'd be no discrimination around sexuality or race. There would be no discrimination based on belief systems, creeds, based on, you know, ideological perspectives. There'd be no discrimination economically. Like, we can't even see that these days. There are whole continents that live, you know, radically different from the worldview that we think is perfectly normal. But there's a future out there where the choice of how we want to live is accessible to all. And it might compromise some of what we might want, you know, like the pool in the backyard and, you know, the 5-story boat that won't fit in it, so I have it at the yacht. We may have to cede some of those realities. But getting to that dream happens one brain at a time, one thought at a time, one image, one vision, one commitment at a time. And we are tied up in that together. Do we all see exactly the same future? No. But do we all want the same thing? Pretty much. We want happiness. We want dignity. We want a sustainable future in which the human race can continue to figure these things out as it goes. And we have, each of us, something that is very crucial to bringing that future about. So make sure that you use yours, that you use it to sort things out, that you identify which values you want to live by, that you put your shoulders into that work, and that you help make that dream come through, despite the reality and the frustrations and the fact that it might not look exactly the way you wanted it to when it's done. But you've done the work. You've got what it takes. And we're all in this together. Thank you. Ago, John DePetty shared with me that someone in his family, and I'm not sure which person it was, but had noted the double meaning in the phrase make light. And here at West Hill, making light is a big part of how we see the world, that we have a responsibility to be light in the world, to share that as widely as we can. So this week, while John and his family are experiencing this loss and traveling that road of grief together, I want to give you that. Make light. Take those things that are so heavy they're almost impossible to bear and shift them to the shoulders of everyone around you so that together you can make them lighter and you can approach the world less bowed, less dragged down. And then make light in all those places of the world where the story has not yet captivated hearts, where the dream has not yet come to people who can really bring it to themselves and share your light with them. So make light. Go from this place being light and go in peace.
Give your all, give your all for
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.